to order. Today, quite a day. It's earliest in the session that we've ever had the omnibus bill rolled out. Today we are going to review the materials, and I hope there was enough for everybody who needed to have a copy of the bill and the supporting.
Okay.
Aren't enough copies, or hope there are enough copies for everyone. And I will say that after the committee today, all of this will be available online as well. So, our agenda for today is to review what's in the bill, going over it, and any general questions and clarification. Our plan is for tomorrow to take testimony from the various folks have had some time to digest it a bit, and then I hope then by Wednesday we'll be as a committee ready to work toward action. Today's committee. So that's where we start, and I will just say in preface that our objectives here have been to work within the targets that we've been given, and I think we were very fortunate that we did not have to do major damage to our education programs and education funding. With that, we did make some cuts, and we've accepted some of the governor's cuts. But our aim has been trying to work towards several ends, putting the students first in their achievement. In some cases, it might be trying to redirect some of the resources that we have toward those ends, and also to look at some ways that we can, both tools, whether they be fiscal or mandate relief or regulation relief, that will help our districts cope with the economic realities. And of course, key too is the importance of teachers to this whole process and work toward a means of helping them grow, but also recognizing their achievements and accomplishments toward the goals of improved student achievement and reducing that achievement gap. So that's the goals that we've had in putting this together. And so without further ado, I will turn it to Mr. Nauman, who's going to walk through Article 1 quickly, then Ms. Yonkers and Ms. McQuay are going to they've taken some of the different articles to present, not all of the fiscal implications, because as soon as we get done with that, Mr. Nauman will walk us through the spreadsheets as well. So
Madam Chair and members, first I'll quickly orient you all to all the documents that you have in your packet, some of which might be a little bit unfamiliar. The big, thick one is the bill that we're going to begin with. Then there are two documents with a series of numbers on them in landscape orientation that are in an 8.5 by 11 format. Those are the traditional aid and levy tracking that we use whenever an omnibus bill is created. Then there is a data run that we'll talk about later, and an omnibus education bill summary. And then I'll begin by starting in with Article 1, and members who haven't sat through an omnibus bill before, I'll orient you quickly about how the bill itself is organized. It's done by article. Statutes are organized by subject, and they fall in statutory order. So if you're looking for a collection of sections that you remember from your original bill, they may fall out of order and be sort of disorganized as it appears, because other statutes appear interspersed between those various statutes. Then come the uncodified statute, then the appropriation, and any repealers where necessary. So I'll begin on page 2 of the document. This is Article 1, the general education section. I mentioned the disorganization because we're going to make reference to a collection of statutes. that deal with homeschools, as well as Senator Thompson's bill that we passed earlier, all of which kind of are back and forth. The first section is the calculation of income of the permanent school trust fund. That was the Senator Olson bill. Then section two of the article is homeschool. This removes some requirements of superintendents and permits a nationally recognized entrance exam to measure student performance. Section three of the bill also relates to homeschools and clarifies and adjusts information required to be submitted by the superintendent to the superintendent by homeschools. Moving on to the second page, beginning at the bottom, the fourth page, section four is Senator Hand's early graduation achievement scholarship program. In this particular section, we're adjusting general education payments to reduce dollars that are going to be paid out later to students who participate in the program. Then section five is the actual scholarship program. It provides students who graduate early with dollars that they can use in higher education institutions, and that dollar figure varies under subdivision two based on how early a student graduates. Then moving on to section six, returns us to the homeschool discussion. In this section, we are adjusting some of the reporting provisions. Section seven of the bill, beginning at the top of page seven, limits the requirements that homeschools education materials be provided only to non-publics that exceed 10 pupils. Members may recall that we had a 15-pupil threshold in prior versions of this bill. When you talked about it before, it suggested for the purposes here down to 10.
And Mr. if I may just interject, this bill has passed, has already gone through the floor with all green votes, but we did make that one change at the request the private school group to lower that to 10. That still, I think, puts all of the homeschoolers under this, but there are some small schools that would still be there.
So then, Madam Chair, Section 8, similarly, because there's a couple of sections that deal with requirements on homeschools, we have that same limit on the services provided section. Section 9 is a governor's rec that Dr. Melcher spoke about before. This relates to how LEP students are counted, and sort of a technical adjustment, but there is a slight cost to this. Then in Section 10, we'll come back to this in more detail when we begin talking about the spreadsheets. This adjusts the basic revenue calculation. This is the formula allowance at $51.24 for fiscal year 2011. Then it increased by $50 in each year of fiscal 12 and fiscal 13. So it increases to $51.74 and $52.24. Section 11 is the chair's recommendation on compensatory revenue. The compensatory revenue calculation stays exactly the same for fiscal year 2011. Then beginning in 2012, it converts to a calculation that is frozen at fiscal year 2011 levels, and that's what the number on line 9.26 is. That's the frozen entitlement from fiscal year 11 for compensatory revenue B. There's also an additional adjustment in that the dollars are now paid on the district level as opposed to going down to the site level. Section 2 came from Senator Brown's bill that delinks secondary sparsity from the formula allowance. The same with Section 13 for the elementary sparsity formula delinks, and members will note that 51.24, so the effect of the increase in the formula is not passed through onto these sparsity.
Madam Chair, excuse me. Madam Chair, do you want us to ask our questions while we're going through, or wait until Mr. Nauman is done?
Well, I don't think that would be a problem to raise it if there's a clarification question that you need as we're going along.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Nauman, with regard to the compensatory being capped, if we have increased students, so for example, if there's projected to be this 15,000 or 12, however many students in the future, would there be a savings actually because we wouldn't be running them through the compensatory formula?
Madam Chair, Senator Bonoff, I think we'll talk about this in a little bit more detail, but I did gloss over one of the key calculations just to get through the document. But it's important for members to hear how this calculation will now work. So What happens in fiscal 11 is we create an allowance for school districts on compensatory revenue, a compensatory allowance, if you will. And it's created by taking the total compensatory dollars in a district and dividing it by your adjusted marginal cost pupil units for each district. And then that allowance carries forward into subsequent years and gets multiplied by the subsequent year's adjusted marginal cost pupil units. So there is an adjustment. However, if the amount excees $414,260,000, it gets prorated down to that level.
Okay.
If it's underneath that amount, it gets adjusted upwards. So in every subsequent year, that's the amount for compensatory, so that's why it's referred to as a freeze.
Thank you.
So then the subsequent two sections related to the sparsity calculation. Section 14 at the bottom of page 10 was a stump provision related to the Lancaster School District, where they lost sparsity revenue as a result of a school closure in a neighboring district. And there'll be another section on that coming up. Section 15 also was a Senator Stumpf's bill. This changes the definition of uses of operating capital to include leased vehicles. Section 16 delinks the transportation sparsity revenue from the formula allowance calculation. So members will see on line 2.33 of 5124 on that. Section 17 comes from Senator Hand's bill on the early graduation achievement. This there's a reallocation in law that allows school districts to allocate dollars from students that graduate early in 12th grade to other purposes, all-day kindergarten, for example. And in light of the fact that the early graduation dollars will now be used for a different purpose, we have to exclude them from that, and that's done in that section. Then Section 18 also is Senator Hand's bill, and it adjusts the open and standing appropriation to include the early graduation achievement program. So then Section 19 comes from Senator Thompson's bill. It eliminates the school psychologist's maintenance of effort from the Safe Schools levy, the operative language being on page 14. Section 20 is a combination of two items. It originally came in as Senator Bonhoeff's bill. Members may recall we had a discussion when we heard Senator Bonhoeff's bill that there were some technical adjustments that, frankly, a drafting error that occurred in the 2010 session. So the language is on lines 15.6 through 15.10, correct the drafting error. The operative language from Senator Bonhoeff's bill is on 15.3. Section 21 returns to the homeschool discussion. In this case, we're eliminating some of the verification requirements of superintendents to enable students to be able to receive a learner's permit. Madam Chair, I think it's both.
Learner's permit
to learn to drive. Yes. And then beginning on Section 22, also is homeschool. Requires the revocation of a driver's license if a student perjures oneself about being enrolled in a homeschool. So that's a reason for pulling back a driver's license. And the same applies, Section 23, that relates to the violations. Had a little bit of fun reading those statutes this afternoon. Madam Chair and members, Section 24 permits a person in charge of homeschool instruction to issue a permit for a work permit for students aged 14 and 15. Then Section 25 returns to the Senator Stumpf's bill on that Lancaster calculation. Here we're referencing Kitson Central School District because that was the neighboring school district that actually made the closure. Then inside Senator Stumpf's bill was a Carlson Amendment. That also relates to a very similar topic. They missed a deadline last year on a similar calculation, and that's included here. Section 27 is the salary freeze discussion that's already passed the Senate. This, I believe, the Senate is very familiar with at this point, but we can go into detail if you'd like. Section 28 is the appropriations. I'll mention here that all shifted appropriations do reflect a 70-30 shift. That calculation is made in the Article 5 that Dr. McQuay will speak about later. And then, members, The next item that I'll mention is on probably about a quarter of the way down, page 23, section 29. There's two homeschool repealers that relate to superintendent on-site visits and parental documentation of on-site visits. Then the staff development program on 23.9 has been repealed. The 2% set aside on staff development revenue has been repealed, and the contract penalty deadline has been repealed. And that item is a $700,000 cost and it's built into the general education appropriations. Madam Chair, that concludes Article 1.
Thank you. Article 2 is?
Madam Chair.
Senator Bono.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Nauman, I understood what you said about the 2% set-aside being repealed and the other repealers, but I didn't understand what you meant when you said the staff development program is being repealed.
Madam Chair and Senator Bonoff, there is an actual staff development program with a series of guidelines and requirements that school districts have to meet. That section has also been repealed in this draft.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Then, Madam Chair, members, moving along to Article 2, that's on page 23, Section 1, is a combination of two things. First is part of the Senator Stumpf's bill with the career and tech levy. That's on 24.12 to 24.13. And then 24.31 to 24.32 was from Senator Hand's Common Core Standards bill with the prohibition. Section 2 was from Senator Daley's bill that about taking the skills exam in reading, writing, mathematics before entrance into a board-approved teacher preparation program. And that is the same, subsection 3 is part of that bill. Then section 4 is a new provision. It's for salary increases for teachers to be based on student achievement. And section 5 is the Senator Rosen bill for the qualified economic offer. And then section 6 is, again, a combination of two things. One is that from Senator Olson's bill with the teacher tenure being in renewable 5-year contracts. And then this also deals with teacher termination and discharge and whether or not they have arbitration or a hearing before the school board. Section 7 is more with from Senator Olson's 636 with the 5-year tenure renewable contracts. Section 8 is the more from the bill with the teacher discharge or termination, as well as Section 9 is, except from Senator Olson's bill, with the superintendent being able to exempt from the unrequested leave of absence order teachers who have instruction or license, or who could provide instruction that a similarly licensed teacher could not provide. Section 10 is then again from the bill about discharge or termination with hearings for the border arbitration. Section 11 is again more from that same bill. And then section 12 is again more for either hearing or arbitration before the school board. Section 13 is then the qualified economic offer, but some of these sections have to be repeated because there's provisions for school districts and cities of the first class, and then provisions for school districts in non-cities of the first class, so that's why the qualified economic offer has to be repeated. And then section 14 is the 5-year renewable teacher tenure contracts for first class city schools. Section 15 is then for first class city schools with the superintendent being able to exempt from the discontinuance order for then teachers who can provide instruction that a similarly licensed teacher cannot provide. Section 16 is a reading instruction stipend for teachers who pass the assessment of reading instruction. Section 17 is the Senator Harrington bill for the full service school zones. Section 18 is also from that full service school zones bill. Then I'm now on page 42 with section 19, and that is from Senator Kreif's bill with the college and the schools. And as just to point out to members, that's actually new language. That section wasn't in the bill, but this talks about the agreements that need to be for arranged for colleges and school classes. Section 20 has the operative language on page 45. That's where it gives an extra year to charter school authorizers to be approved by the commissioner if they had chartered school before August 1, 2009. excuse me, then section 21, going over to page 46 and 47, is the taking away the grandfather on charter school building lease aid. In section 40, the governor's recommendation. Section 42 is Senator Nelson's bill at the beginning of that with the Serve Minnesota Innovation Act. That's the same for section 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, taking you all the way now to page 50, section 29, and 30. Then section 31. Starting at 50.22 is Senator Stumpf's career and tech levy bill. Then section 32 is the literacy incentive aid and that calculation for that aid, which is a combination of growth and proficiency. Then section 33 on page 52 is a clarification on charter school startup aid, which is a governor's recommendation. Section 34 on page 52 is the literacy incentive aid limit, capping it at the dollar amount there on 52.12. Then there's literacy transition revenue on section 35, which is keyed off of districts that received integration revenue. Then section 36 is the appropriations, which follow up on the spreadsheets. That takes you to several pages, and then 37 is where the repealers are. And there's quite a few. There's so that's page 57, starting at line 2 or line 3. So the first two, 124D.871 and 124D.88, are the magnet school program grants. Then 124D.11, subdivision 8, was the governor's recommendation for the, as well as the magnet school was, but the governor's recommendation for charter school startup. 124D.38, subdivisions 4, 5, and 6 are some definitions from the Youth Works, which was then became the Serve Minnesota Act. Then 124D.86, 124D.892, and 124D.896 are related to integration and integration revenue. And 124D.87 is also related to integration revenue. And then paragraph F was the Minnesota rules. I won't read you all the parts, but that is the DSEG and integration rule.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Article 3 begins on right after that on page 57. Section 1 is a recommendation to decrease the program growth factor from 4 and
okay, before you start, Ms. McQuay, Senator Bono.
Madam Chair, beginning to be a little uncomfortable. I'm the only one who keeps asking these questions, but I'll keep asking. So with regard to the integration rule, so I just want, I think that went pretty quickly. I'm not sure if everybody understands. We just repealed the integration rule in its entirety, correct? Okay. So, okay, just want to get that. Thanks. Madam Chair and members, the change to the program growth factor is on line 57.30. That changes the growth factor from 4.6% to 0. The special education regular aid will continue to increase as it relates to pupil increases. Section 2 reduces the program growth factor for excess cost aid from 2% to 0%. Again, this will increase accordingly to based on the ADM counts in the district. Section 3, then, is the appropriations that Mr. Nauman will speak to when he goes over the spreadsheet. Article 4 begins the facilities and technology provisions. Section 1 is the debt service appropriation, and this is language that's loaded into the statute to ensure to the bondholders that they will be paid. Section 2 begins Senator Limmer's health and safety revenue program that the committee heard. And that continues, those changes continue through page 65. Section 3 is the change to allow districts that are members of the TIES program to continue to levy for their facility costs, and those that levy is allowed on page 67, line 16, from 2012 to 2022. Section 4 is the Senator Bonoff bill that allows Wayzata to be eligible for the alternative facilities revenue program. Section 5 continues the Senator Limmer health and safety bill. And then Section 6 is the appropriation provisions for facilities and technology. Article 5 then is nutrition and accounting, and there are no changes to nutrition here, but there are some accounting provisions that are included. Section 1 is a governor's recommendation, and this changes the methodology for tax recognition, going from net levy calculation to gross levy calculation. And that change is continued in Section 2. That's also a governor's recommendation. And Section 3 is the change to the aid payment percentage, and that change is made on lines 22 and 23 of page 71. And the shift then is 70%, 70-30 in fiscal years 2011 and later. Section 4 is Senator Cruz's bill to extend the $51 allowable transfer for two additional years. The bill, as the committee saw it, was to allow that to be a permanent transfer, and this simply allows it an extension for 2 years. Section 5 begins the fund transfers that the committee heard. The first one is for Becker. That was a Senator Brown bill. Subdivision 2 was a Senator Koch proposal. Subdivision 3, Elk River, Senator Brown had that. Again, the way the committee saw that particular fund transfer, it was based on a percentage of the amount in the debt redemption fund, and that was allowed continuously. And the way it's written here, it's just a one-time transfer of $690,000. Correct, Madam Chair. The way that Senator Brown brought this bill in front of the committee, it was to the undesignated general fund, and that's changed here to the operating capital account. Senator Dames brought in the fund transfer for Medelia, and Senator Koch amended the Delano bill to include Monticello, a fund transfer for Monticello, and Senator Peterson brought to the committee a St. Cloud fund transfer. Then in Section 6, this is one-time language that goes with the governor's recommendation of changing the levy recognition methodology. Section 7 is the appropriation for nutrition, for the nutrition accounts, and Section 8 is the repealer of the cash flow borrowing. Articles 6 and 7 and 8 just are appropriations, and those will go. We'll go over those when Mr. Nauman goes through the spreadsheet. And then Article 9 begins on page 77, and this language was a governor's recommendation to slow the growth by reducing the program growth factor in adult basic education from 3% down to 2%. All the language stricken is just obsolete language. Section 2, the committee hasn't seen before, but that goes along with the stricken language in the first section, and it just cleans up the statute a little bit more. Then Section 3 is the appropriations for that, and the adult basic education appropriation reflects that change to the growth factor.
And then, Madam Chair, members, moving to Article 10 is the state agencies article. Section 1 is the provision regarding the Minnesota State Academies and letting parents apply to place their children or child at the state academy. Then Section 2 is an appropriation. That's the department's budget. Then Section 3 is the appropriation for the state academies, 4 for the Purpose Center. And then Article 11 is the forecast adjustments. And we don't need to go through all those.
Go through every one.
That's the bill.
So, Madam Chair, that concludes the bill.
Very good. Quick work of that. Start the spreadsheet process.
So, Madam Chair, with your permission, I'll begin waltzing through the education aid calculations. That is, for members' orientation, it's a landscape document that says education FY 2012-13 budget appropriation tracking, and the font is slightly different from the property tax tracking, Senate file quadruple X. And across the columns is the numbers from the February forecast for fiscal year 2010 and 2011, and then a biennial calculation, and then for the February forecast 2012-2013 and a biennial calculation, and then the Senate numbers that are recommended in this draft for 12 and 13 and then biennium. We calculate a difference relative to the February 2010-2011 biennium, the biennium that we're in right now. And members, it's probably useful to keep in mind that we had a target in this committee for $14,158,064,000, and we're slightly under target, slightly being less than 50,000. So, members, there are a collection, and I'll also mention going down the rows that there is a definite nomenclature to whether something is italicized or underlined. We talked earlier about when Dr. McQuay spoke of the shift calculations returning to a 70-30 calculation. Any program that is shifted is underlined, notwithstanding general education, which, of course, is also underlined. But as we move through them, you can see looking at line 33 is a good example, the abatement aid calculation, that is a shifted program. And when a line item is italicized, that indicates that there's a policy choice of some sort going on. Because this is a large spreadsheet that includes governor's recommendations that may or may not have been accepted here, you may find an item that's italicized that has zeros or no numbers at all. And that indicates that there was a policy choice that was taken probably by the governor. And I'm certainly happy to point those out. So, members, as we talked about, I'm going to begin on line 3. There's I'll begin, frankly, at the very top that says formula allowance. The formula allowance in the base is 5124 for all years. The Senate recommendation increases it, and you can see under the dollar increase line, $50. So that's about a 1% increase to the formula allowance. So it goes from 5124 to 5174 and 5224, and that gets carried out into the tails. The monetary effect of that is a $133 million increase. The compensatory freeze on line 4 at 2011 levels saves $53 million. There's an aid payment shift calculation on line 11. And members, frankly, unless there's detailed questions about some of these items, I'll mention that overall general education is $11.5 million in fiscal 12 and 13. This compares to the $9.1 million general education appropriation in fiscal year 2010-11. So you can see the general education appropriations are up almost $2.4 billion. And, Madam Chair, I'm happy to explain that the primary difference for that is the shift. So in 2010 and 11, the shift tended to depress the appropriations, so they were artificially low. So in making a comparison back to that biennium, it's a somewhat deceptive number to show that kind of an increase. Madam Chair and members, the next policy choice, I think I will that concludes that page, and we can flip now to the next page. The next policy choice is in line 61, and there's a couple of items, actually about three items that are going on here. You can see this is the non-public pupil aid. There's savings associated with Senator Olson's homeschool provision. There's slight increase. When you adjust the formula allowance, this program has to be adjusted upwards, so there's a 1% increase each year associated with that. And then Senator Thompson's bill generated a little bit of savings off the freeze. And the same applies in line 62, non-public pupil transportation, where there is a 1% adjustment associated with the formula and then a little bit of savings associated with Senator Thompson's bill. And Madam Chair and members, again, the shift is going to distort some of these calculations, but relative to the February 2010 biennium, the other general education programs are up by about $4 million. So, Madam Chair and members, moving now down to the education excellence calculations, the governor's recommendation for charter school building lease aid was accepted, and there is an appropriation of $24 million above the prior biennium. The governor's recommendation for the startup aid was accepted, and there's a savings relative to the prior biennium of 1.6. And Madam Chair and members, on line 75, we display this line item as integration aid / literacy transition aid. Integration aid begins phasing out in the Senate package in fiscal year 2012. Essentially, the aid and levy are frozen at 2011 levels, and then beginning in 13, they go away, and those dollars are repurposed. And Madam Chair and members, because of the shift calculations, you actually see that there is a lagging payment associated with the fiscal 12 entitlement for integration. That's that $19.2 million. So, Madam Chair and members, on line 76 is the literacy incentive aid. That comes on. It has an entitlement of about $84, $85 million. We're only showing 60.2 or so here because it's a shifted program. Madam Chair and members, line 77 is the reading instruction stipend program. There's $4.45 million associated with that program. On line 78, the governor's recommendation was accepted on the magnet school grants, and those have been repealed. Madam Chair and members, on line 80, inter-district DSEG transportation is the next policy change. There is no change in fiscal year 2012, but inter-district DSEG transportation revenue has been repealed effective in fiscal year 2013. Madam Chair and members, the tribal contract schools line is highlighted for the effect of the formula allowance has on this program. That formula also generates a 1% adjustment for the tribal contract schools, so we're showing a slight increase in spending on that line item. Madam Chair and members, line 86, 87, both are italicized and underlined, but those are only governors. Those are the effects of the governors and no change in the Senate that we did not accept that recommendation in this proposal. The early childhood literacy programs were effectively tripled. They went from a 1.375 in the prior biennium to 4.125. The Minnesota Foundation for Student Organizations, frankly, should be italicized because there's a slight increase of $75,000 each year. Now the biennial appropriation at 1.6. On line 95, the governor had recommended an elimination of the Get Ready, Get Credit EPAS, the Education Planning and Assessment line item, and that was not accepted. On line 100 and 100 and 103 are the regular and excess cost calculations for special education. And members will recall that Dr. McQuay spoke of the elimination of the program growth factor, returning it down to 1.0 as opposed to 1.46 for regular and 1.02 for excess cost. Those have been flattened out, and there's savings associated with that. Madam Chair and members, the fund transfer for Elk River on line 112, because that district had equalization and the others did not, we actually have to carry a slight equalization cost associated with that fund transfer, and there's $179,000 associated with that particular initiative. Members, there's no changes in the nutrition programs, so unless there's questions, I'll skip over those, and the same would apply in the libraries.
Madam Chair, just going back for 1 second, the transportation associated with integration, does that mean that the Choice Is Yours program has been discontinued?
Madam Chair and Senator Bonoff, I don't think that the program per se has been discontinued, but the funding that was associated with it has been repealed. The district could choose to fund it in a different manner. Madam Chair and members, my next point, I believe, would be on line 162. Well, I'll mention line 150 because there was a governor's recommendation that was not accepted. That's the MELF early childhood rating system that was not accepted in this proposal. On line 162, the governor recommended a slight reduction to the program growth factor in adult basic education, and that initiative, recommendation was accepted. So it moves from a 3% escalator down to a 2% increase. Then, Madam Chair and members, on the Department of Education, well, I mentioned before I pass over it, the subtotal on the education aids, $14,088,062,000. That's on line 171. And relative to the base, it's up 2.7. But again, I hasten to add that's primarily a shift difference. So, Madam Chair and members, on line 176, that references the Department of Education overall budget base. Then there's a collection of riders that you'll see in the bill if you care to delve into that level of detail. The Board of Teaching at 618 each year, administrators 167, 260 for the Children's Museum, to Duluth at 50, 41. Those were all included in the original forecast and were not adjusted. The recommendation on line 185, there was a little bit of rulemaking for non-public pupil and homeschool initiative from Senator Olson's bill, and $10,000 is carried for that. Also, the alternative teacher initiative that was passed by the Senate and is now law was also had a little bit of rulemaking, and that $44,000 from the fiscal note is funded. Senator Hand's initiative in the early childhood graduation achievement program, the department requested early graduation achievement.
Thank you.
Did I say childhood? I apologize if I did. Required an FTE for that work, and that has been funded. Then there's on line 189, a 15% general operating budget reduction to the overall department budget. So the department total budget is $33.9 million for the biennium. The Perpich Center similarly begins with an overall base number and then a general operating reduction of $500,000. That's about 7% reduction. The governor also for the academies, line 200 begins with the base. Then the academies had a recommendation to adjust the nutrition services, the cafeteria, from employees to a services contract. They spoke of a coincidence where they had a collection of retired employees at the same time that the budget was getting a little challenged. So they recommended this, and it seemed that was accepted in this proposal. So the total appropriation for the Faribault Academies is 23.2. That initiative saves some money. So, Madam Chair and members, there's on line 216, the property tax credits effect from the shift is carried in this bill. There's about $14.7 million of savings associated with the payment shift for that. And Madam Chair and members, under the Senate biennial number, line 218, general fund E-12 appropriations, I'll remind you that the total target was $14,158,064. We're at $14,158,033. So I believe that's about $31,000 on the bottom line. The remaining lines, primarily with one exception, represent the netting out of the shifts so members can see what the how the shifts affect the overall appropriations. And then on line 261, some fiscal analyst forgot to title that, but that was the Board of Teaching line item revenues from the special revenue fund, and that's the $30,000 that they requested. So, Madam Chair, that concludes the overall AIDS tracking for the recommendation, and at your pleasure, I'll move on to the levies.
Thank you, Mr. Nauman.
So, Madam Chair and members, I would now, if there aren't questions, move on to the property tax tracking document. It looks very similar, slightly different font. We don't have underlining here because the shifts don't affect the levies, but we do have italicization that references any policy changes. The first, and I'm going to work members primarily off the different Senate minus current law pay 2002. It's almost smack dab in the middle of the page.
2012.
I'm sorry. A little history. 2012. Thank you. The first change is on line 8. When dollars are added to the formula allowance, there's some interactions with some of the formulas, and that was the case with both equity and referendum on line 8 and line 24. The equity levies went down slightly. The referendum levies went up by $190,000, and those numbers are carried there. On line 34, the effect of the elimination of the integration levy in fiscal 13 is shown as $28.2 million of savings. Then Senator Stumpf and Senator Olson had an initiative on the career and technical program that we discussed when we went through the language. That one is 100% levy, and it generates about an almost $8.6 million increase. Madam Chair and members, flipping to the second of six pages, I'm going to reference line 54, 55, 57, and 64 as a group. And this is the effect of making the Wayzata School District eligible for alternative facilities. Members recall that they were requesting authority to come into the alternative facilities program. I think it's about 3 to 4 years earlier than the schedule would have normally had them come in based on their projected growth. And the district came before the committee and said, we're going to do what's called a pay-as-you-go levy that doesn't generate any property tax recognition shift, and we're going to eliminate some of the levies that we're currently doing and replace it with levies on alternative facilities. So those lines that I mentioned, 54, 55, and 64, are savings associated with the district not doing levies that it would otherwise have done. And then on line 57, it's the new levy when they come onto the program. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then line 63 is the building lease levy. This is the TIES program. Members will recall they wanted to do some additional maintenance to the program. Senator Olson had that bill, and that had a $632,000 effect, and we're carrying that number. As I mentioned at the top of the levies, beginning on line 74 and line 73, a change to the formula allowance generates changes to some of the equity and referendum programs. But because we were changing in line the formula allowance in fiscal 2012, but levies have already been set for that year and we're past them, we carry the fiscal 12 effects in fiscal year 13. And those are 74 and 76 for both referendum and equity. And Madam Chair and members, the total general fund on line 97 is down $18.8 million. The tail goes up to a little bit over $19 million. Madam Chair and members, Senator Thompson's bill had a slight effect on the school age care extended day. This is part of the freeze. There was $96,000 of savings associated with that provision, which creates that reduction in the total community services fund. Then beginning on line 125 is the fiscal effect, the property taxes that we have to carry associated with the fund transfers. Becker, Monticello, Delano, Medelia, St. Cloud, and on the second page, Elk River. And so members will recall that Elk River was equalized, so this is the levy portion. We already talked about the aid portion. So the total debt service changes are up 2.7, but that's not a structural number. That's only a one-time number associated with those fund transfers. And then remember, there's a lot of line items here, but if you work your way down to 198, you can see that levy savings on the property tax side of the ledger, 16.131 million. The structural number is a little over 19. So, Madam Chair, that concludes the levy presentation.
Do you want to give any just basic instruction? I think it's pretty clear.
I'll maybe a couple of comments, Madam Chair. We're not looking at every single revenue item here that school districts have in front of them. So, for example, the federal funds are omitted. Some of the smaller levy items that school districts receive money off of are not included in the calculation here. But we include all of general education, all of special education, and then a few of the other smaller items where changes have occurred as a result of the proposal. And to orient you across the columns, we have the February forecast for fiscal year 2010, and we're just showing that as a total number. But I'll mention that, as we say in the upper left-hand corner, we're looking at general education, special integration, literacy incentive aid, that is in fiscal 13, career in tech, and these revenues are listed per adjusted ADM. Then in fiscal 11, we break out the component parts. So you see the basic revenue, compensatory, and then all other general education. And the question was asked me earlier, does that include the operating referendum? And it does. And it's technically not part of the operating, part of the general education program, but it's included in that particular column. Then special education, integration, career, and tech, and then a total of those particular revenue items. Then Senate file quadruple X for fiscal year 2012 repeats all of those particular line items, and then the same for fiscal year 13 with one addition. That is when the literacy incentive aid comes on, and that is added into the calculation at that point as new revenue. So, Madam Chair, you can the districts are organized by their district number, which is traditionally how we have done that in the past.
So that's been quite a load here, but are there any questions or clarifications that you would like to ask for? Senator Hahn, all of the information is there. We're not going to repeat it, but
I've been listening on my secret earphones.
Okay, good.
Chair.
You're multitasking.
I'm multitasking, Madam Chair.
Are there no questions, or you just want a few minutes to digest? And don't hesitate.
Testimony.
You will. Maybe a little opportunity for a little reflection. You know, I've not kept it a secret that literacy by third grade has been a rather important goal, and that is evidenced in several of the things that are going forward here. And we didn't have a chance, or couldn't find it at the time that might have been more appropriate to share it. But we've got about a 4.5 minute. DVD that was produced this summer for some folks that were making a presentation at a national conference on this literacy program. And it gives you a little perspective. This particular DVD has gotten some mileage. I took it with me to the Education Commission of the States, and the Roger Sampson, the head of that, is very much interested in this. And I left it with him, and he has taken it to D.C. and showed it to a group of foundations, and there's a couple others. It's been getting around. The effort that we have had here in the past in terms of improving instruction for reading. And so now maybe we can we lower some lights here so you can see a little bit better? going to try to just transfer this from the computer, and I think the sound that may well work. But it's just 4.5 minutes. Both Senator Saltzman and I are I give a little squib, but listen particularly to the students and parents and teachers.
Education, as we know it, is in deep trouble, and the results can be seen all around us. For example, in 2011, we'll spend $310 billion putting people in jail and keeping them there. And the thing is, over 70% of them are functionally illiterate. And at the heart of the matter lies one insidious factor. Up to 40% of our children are reaching the third grade unable to read. And just what are the schools telling these children's parents?
I asked this kindergarten teacher, and she said, oh, no, it's fine. Some boys, some kids just, it's slow. It'll come.
The teachers really didn't know what to do. I kept hearing the message that, you know, he's just immature. He just needs time to grow, and he'll get it.
And to be told repeatedly, she'll catch up. She will figure this out. This is normal at this stage. We heard that a lot.
I remember just noticing that incredible anxiety and frustration that she felt around not being able to read and not understanding it. Kids figure out at a very young age who's reading and who's not reading and who's able to do it and who's not and who's struggling and who it comes easily to. And they start to internalize right off the bat kind of that something's wrong with them, that there's something going on that they don't understand and that makes them feel stupid or dumb.
Of the 100% of kids who don't read where they should be, only 10% of them are wired neurologically for difficulty in reading. The other 90% are what we term instructional casualties. They've just never been taught properly.
Minnesota's success in advancing the cause of improving instruction in reading so that all children can learn to read is a powerful demonstration of what can happen when people of diverse perspectives and talents and positions come together toward a common cause.
This whole situation with not teaching kids how to read, it's really a national tragedy. And unfortunately, teachers are blamed, and it's not the teachers. We have teachers who are so well-intentioned, but if they're trained incorrectly in schools of education, then they don't know what they don't know. It's when they come to take training later and learn what they don't know that the revelation occurs to them, and they get very angry because they weren't taught properly in the first place.
When you were in college, you heard a conversation about phonics. And when you were in college, you learned a conversation, you learned about whole language. And what we learned, what we were taught is that it was either one or the other. It was either whole language or phonics. But of course, it's the answer lies in the middle, it's that gray area. And that's what the National Reading Panel set out for us. That's what Minnesota's version of Reading First through the University of Minnesota rolled out for us. That the answer is both and, it's whole language and it's phonics. And instead of looking at it through those two lenses, or one of those two lenses, look at it through both, but also through the five components of literacy. Phonemic awareness, phonics, fluency, vocabulary, and comprehension.
What was most compelling to us in terms of the testimony, we needed something to really push us over the top in terms of gaining support from our colleagues, and it was when the teachers came in and gave such a compelling testimony about the fact that they didn't know what they didn't know. They didn't realize that they didn't have the skills needed to really help struggling readers. And that testimony where teachers came in and said, after I took this training, after I took this course, and I came back and I saw, I am making a difference now. These children are reading.
Through all of this, it's just amazing to think back to what I used to do. And honestly, when I think back to what I used to do for kids, I'm ashamed. I really am ashamed. Not so much how I treated kids. I'll never change that. The way I treated kids was outstanding and awesome. A lot of love there, a lot of passion. But when it came to teaching kids, at that point in my career, I just didn't know what I know now. And it's, I wish I can go back.
I wish I can go back and reteach those kids, and I hope, hopefully somewhere along the way after me, someone had the knowledge to get these kids to read.
Agenda for today, if there's any reflection or question. Senator Bonhoff and I, if you were following the reading of John Alexander making this presentation, Senator Bonhoff and I were at that. We were two of the legislators that were there to benefit, and that's kind of what lit the fire. These parents.
So, yes, Madam Chair, I just want to congratulate you. You know, there are things we'll go through the bill, and, you know, we may support this piece or that piece, but you were able, through becoming the Chair of Education, to express your vision in this bill and to take a strong stand for literacy, and that's a wonderful thing. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bono. If there are no further questions, tomorrow we will be taking testimony, and so come prepared.
Oh, I just have an announcement that might be of interest for our education committee. Of course, this is the Inside Out group that is in the Great Hall, and they're there until about 4:15. They're packing up, but maybe if you rush up, you can see them. And I'm also having a little
Great Hall is right out here.
Oh, right through here. Sorry. So you might check it on your way up. But I am having a reception for the scientists, the presenters, and the students and the teachers, and that's in room 318 following our committee meeting. So if you'd like to go and either visit with them or, and of course the audience is welcome as well to see the integrated science project, you're more than welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Nelson. I think all business is completed. Meeting is adjourned.